Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hello everyone, welcome to this new episode of the podcast. This particular episode is sponsored by Audible. They are the world's leading provider of downloadable audiobooks. And because they're my sponsor, you can take advantage of their special offer that they're offering to all my listeners. There's a new word. I've just created a new word. They're offering something to all my listeners, and that is a free audiobook download. If you want to take advantage of that, just go to teacherluke.co.uk/audible. Check out Audibles. You can start a trial with them, and that includes the free download of any audiobook of your choice. And why don't you try downloading one of the Harry Potter books, because they're all now available as audiobooks and they're very, very popular indeed. Okay, so just check out teacherluke.co.uk/audible or click an Audible logo on my website. Now let's start this new episode, and here we go.
Ladies and gentlemen,
this is a journey into
the English language.
A journey into
the DNA of the English language.
Really?
The DNA of the English language. Now, that's a really quite a strong claim.
I find your lack of faith disturbing.
Who are you?
You talking to me? You talking to me?
You know who I'm talking to.
I'm a school teacher. I teach English composition.
Oh, really?
Yes!
Hello there, welcome to this episode of Luke's English Podcast. In this one, I've decided to call a meeting, so gather around everybody. Thanks very much for coming to the meeting. As usual, there are tea and coffee making facilities just over there if you'd like to make yourself a hot drink. We do have a small selection of biscuits available too, and some crisps and other snacks over there. This is a primarily an English meeting, so there are things to eat. Almost all of them are likely to raise your blood pressure. But they taste good, you know, especially those chocolate digestive biscuits over there, the best biscuits in the world. They're English, but they're good. Thanks for that, advertising department, for coming up with that catchy slogan. What else? There is water as well, of course. Don't forget to drink water. There is also air in the room. We have opened the windows here, so there is air available if you'd like to breathe. I recommend that you breathe. I recommend that everybody at the meeting breathes, because that's going to, you know, be important. That will mean that you all stay conscious during the meeting. So please do try to stay awake during this meeting here that's happening on a Friday afternoon, late on a Friday afternoon, the time of the week when everyone is at their most motivated. So thanks very much for coming to the meeting. I've called this meeting in order to just deal with some stuff that's going on at the moment. You know, it's one of those meetings that I regularly invite you to attend. This is one of those meetings where I've asked you to come, but I don't want you to say anything, okay? I'm just going to talk to you, and you just have to sit there and listen to me. Obviously, this being a podcast, that's sort of the way it has to work, right? If this was a real business meeting, then it would be a bit one-sided, wouldn't it? Normally, in a real business meeting, I'd be asking for your opinions and opening up the floor for discussion and things like that. But this is a podcast, isn't it? Yeah, even though I'm talking about it like it's a meeting, obviously, it's just a podcast. On the agenda for today in this meeting, we have some news, some football updates, including some stuff about the England and Wales game from yesterday and some other bits of chat about the Euro Football Championships. Some more Brexit chat, some more stuff about Brexit. And then also I will talk a bit about the incident that happened yesterday involving a British MP called Joe Cox, which is actually a pretty tragic story that's still developing. At this point, we don't know all the full facts yet, but needless to say, it's a pretty tragic event. Some of you have left comments on the website asking me about this. You might not be aware of it. A lot of you listening to this won't know who Joe Cox is, that you might not know about what happened to this Member of Parliament. I'll talk about it later on. That's quite a serious story. So, yes, this episode, or this meeting, in fact, is going to start quite lighthearted as we talk about, some recent things and some football stuff. And then it will gradually get a bit more serious, I expect, as it goes along, to the point where we deal with a tragedy that happened yesterday. But, you know, that's fine. I think that it's okay to just talk about any old thing on Luke's English Podcast. Sometimes serious, sometimes lighthearted. You take the rough with the smooth. So, first of all, some general news and announcements. First thing I'd like to do actually is actually just make a few recommendations. I would like to just recommend that you do a couple of things. So first of all, I'd like to recommend that you join the mailing list for my website. So teacherluke.co.uk, and on the right hand side, near the top, underneath the Luke's English Podcast logo, you'll see some links like iTunes and RSS feed links. And then you'll see the mailing list, and that's where you can add your email address. And then anytime I publish something, like a new episode, usually it's new episodes, you'll immediately get an email and you'll know exactly when a new episode has arrived, and then you can just dive in. And also it's a quick way to access the page for the episode as well. And it's worth having a look at the pages for the episodes that I do, because that's where you will find vocabulary notes and often transcriptions. I don't usually transcribe every single episode, but often the first 5 minutes or so will often be transcribed, because I kind of have to, depending on the episode, sometimes I just make it all up as I go along. But often you will find some transcriptions and things on there. So I recommend that you join the mailing list. It's a good way to just get a direct email for new episodes and for direct access to episode pages. Like the Facebook page, Luke's English Podcast is on Facebook. I've been on Facebook for forever. So like the Facebook page, and I often chat with people in little ways, like I post things, post photographs and other stuff on there, and then you'll see lots of Lepsters commenting and things like that. That's nice. Follow me on Twitter. I am on Twitter, of course. My Twitter handle is @EnglishPodcast. That's my name on Twitter, which is pretty weird, because I use Twitter for my podcast stuff, but I also use it for my comedy stuff as well. So anytime I am performing in a comedy show, people tweet, about the show, and there's usually a list of names in the tweet, like, tonight I'm performing at the French Fried Comedy Night with all these people, with at Paul Taylor and Sarah Donnelly and Robert Hain, and then at English Podcast. That's my name, apparently, on Twitter. So I bet people look at that and go, who is this English Podcast? Is that his name? Mr. Podcast. Hello, Mr. Podcast. Nice to meet you. What's your first name? My first name's English. The name's English. The name's Podcast. English Podcast. So I have become a podcast, apparently, on Twitter. Anyway, at English Podcast, and you can get my tweets and things like that. Luke's English Podcast is on iTunes, so you could do me a big favour by leaving a lovely positive review on iTunes. Okay, if you like the podcast, if you think that it's good, if you want to recommend it, then leave a comment, a nice review on iTunes, because that's a really important sort of, what's the word for it? It's like a little sales page. Anyone who's never listened to this, they might find it on iTunes and have a look at some of the reviews, and the reviews will kind of be a really important factor in making those people decide to listen or not. So leave a nice review if you like the podcast. If you don't like the podcast, just don't say anything, please. You can say whatever you want. I don't care. But hopefully, if you want to support me, if you want to pay me back for the time I've spent talking to you here, then you could leave a nice review on iTunes. That would be very nice indeed. Thank you very much. There's a police siren there that you could hear outside, which has just stopped now that I'm... Oh, there it is. It's the most inconsistent siren. Make up your mind, siren. Are you going to make noise or not? Is there an emergency or not? Okay, so leave reviews on iTunes if you fancy it. And generally, just, you know, tell your friends about Luke's English Podcast. Spread the word. Word of mouth is the best way to do that. So that just a few sort of requests or recommendations there in terms of, you know, keeping up with the podcast and stuff. Weather report. I have to give a weather report, don't I, in every episode? So here's my weather report. The weather continues to be strange, ladies and gentlemen, here in Paris, in the capital of France. The weather continues to be strange in the middle of June. Today, it's a mixture of sunshine and showers. Sunshine and showers. Say that as Sean Connery, could you? It's a mixture of sunshine and showers. Now that's a good one for the Sean Connery enthusiasts out there. Miss Moneypenny, as you can see that. What would Sean Connery say? I don't know what he would say. Why would Sean Connery talk about the weather? Would James Bond talk about the weather? I don't know. Has he ever talked about the weather? Ah, Mr. Bond, I see that. I see that you've arrived on time for your meeting with M. Yes, well, I decided to set out early since the weather forecast had said that we'd be experiencing sunshine and showers all morning. Why, Mr. Bond, your conversation level has become so boring. Yes, well, I've been listening to Luke's English Podcast. Okay, I'm being a bit self-deprecating there, suggesting that Moneypenny would consider Sean Connery or James Bond's conversational level to be boring after listening to Luke's English Podcast. Maybe it should go the other way. Maybe it should be like, "Ah, oh, Mr. Bond, you're here for the meeting with M, I imagine." Yes, that's right, Moneypenny. I'm here, and what a lovely day it is. Sunshine and yet showery. An interesting combination. Oh, Mr. Bond, you're... level of conversation about the weather is so intoxicating. Take me now. Yes, this is the effect of listening to Luke's English Podcast on a daily basis. That's obviously the much more realistic outcome of listening to the podcast, isn't it? That your level of conversation in English just becomes incredibly interesting to the point where anyone you talk to just immediately falls for you. So the weather report here, sunshine and showers. I got caught in the rain earlier. I popped outside and the heavens opened. I got completely caught in the rain. Very strange. Anyway, there's the weather. Lunch report. I have to give you a report on what I ate for lunch. I don't know why this is important, but apparently it is. So I had a bento for lunch. A bento. What's a bento, Luke? Well, my Japanese listeners will definitely know what that is. Obento. It's a kind of... basically what they call a lunchbox, but it's like a meal, but in which all the ingredients of the meal are placed in their own little compartments in a box. It's like a specially designed tray for eating a lunch, and you have a bit of fish, and that goes in the fish section. You've got a bit of rice that goes in the rice section. You've got various little mysterious vegetables. I'm not quite sure what they all are, but they go in their own little sections as well. It's delicious and healthy and brilliant. That's the bento box. I like the convenient nature of the box. Everything in its right place. Every bit of food has got its own separate compartment. It's so organized. It's brilliant. You know, so that the food doesn't get mixed up, because sometimes you don't want fish in your rice. You don't want rice in your mysterious vegetables, I suppose. So there you go. Anyway, I had a bento box, and it's an authentic Japanese one because I live not far from the Japanese part of town. I'm probably about 10 to 15 minutes away on foot. And there is an area near the Opera District of Paris, near the centre of town, where they have a couple of streets, and they're full of Japanese and Korean restaurants. And you know that they're the real deal because the people who work in the shops are Japanese or Korean. So the place I like to go is, what's it called? Oh, I can't remember what it's called. Anyway, but it's a place where you can get bento boxes. They specialize in serving bentos. And all the staff there are all Japanese, so they're all, you know, talking in Japanese to each other and stuff. It's very nice. It's like going back to Japan for me. And I get my salmon bento, and I pick a nice cold bottle of oolong tea, oolong cha. And sometimes I'll have a beer if I'm feeling the mood. I might have a Kirin Ichiban or an Asahi or something. And I can settle down and eat my lunch. And it's really good. So there you go. That's my lunch report. I had a nice, satisfying Japanese lunch. And so thank you, Japan. Thanks for inventing the bento. I think you did a very good job there with the bento. So good job. Well done. Anyone else out there who's never had a bento, what are you doing with your life? You need to find a bento and you need to eat that bento. Okay. If you're wondering where to get a bento from, you could try Japan. That might be a good place to start. Okay. If you're wondering, you might now be thinking, but Luke, I can't go to Japan. Well, I don't know. Write a letter to Japan and say, dear Japan, please, could you send some of your people to my town so that you can make bentos and give them to me? I'll pay you money. I'll pay you good money. So if you could, you know, please just contact the emperor or the prime minister or whoever is responsible for, you know, the bentos, the Ministry of Bento Boxes. Get someone on the case so that you can get bentos in a town near you. All right, then what else? Comedy shows in Paris. I think that I should probably tell my audience about the various comedy shows that we have in Paris, okay? That's because I have an audience who listen to this podcast, and I feel like it's my duty to use this to try and tell you about the shows, because I'm trying to support English language comedy in Paris here. I know that most of you, the vast majority of you, aren't in Paris, but there might be some of you who will listen to this and then decide to come to a show, and then, you know, I will have done my bit for the marketing drive for this this fairly sort of fresh and new scene, which needs your support. If you're not in Paris, well, you know, you could bear it in mind. If you come into this area, if you come in this direction and you're wondering what to do, for example, if you're coming here for the Euros or something, you could come and see one of these shows, all right? And again, if you're not coming to Paris and you've got no intention of coming to Paris, then you'll just have to enjoy the words that you're about to hear now and just simply enjoy the sounds of English for about 5 minutes. So there are a few different shows that you could check out, all of them in English. There are plenty of French shows as well, but I'm assuming that you want to see them in English. So, of course, the first show that you would come to see would be Sorry, We're English, which is a stand-up comedy show featuring Paul Taylor and me. And in Sorry, We're English, Paul does half an hour, I do half an hour, and we talk about being English and the, you know, the experiences of being Englishmen living in Paris and the cultural misunderstandings. It's hilarious. And that is at the Pan Am Art Cafe every Thursday at 8 p.m. It's free. You just need to buy a drink, but entry is free. That's nice, isn't it? You'll definitely get your money's worth on that one. Ha, ha, ha. So that's every Thursday at 8 p.m. And if you visit the page for this episode, you will see links for these shows. So you can just click those links and then find the shows. All right. Also, there's a show called Le Best of French Fried Comedy Night. So that's the best of the French Fried Comedy Night. And that's various comedians. They have a plateau of different comedians from different parts of the world. And they all come up and do their thing. And that's every Thursday at 9:30 p.m. in a place called the Théâtre de 10 Heures, the Theatre of 10 Hours, the Théâtre de 10 Heures, which is in Pigalle in Paris. Pigalle, that's not far from the Moulin Rouge. It's just like, you know, 1 or 2 minutes away from the Moulin Rouge in the sort of, it's the sort of sexy district of Paris. I say sexy, it's a bit seedy, to be honest. It's a bit sort of, it's kind of like the seedy area where you find lots of sex shops and things like that. It's pretty funny, to be honest. It's a pretty funny area because it's basically sex shop, pharmacist, sex shop, boulangerie, sex shop, comedy show. You know, that's kind of the way it is. So every Thursday at 9:30, and I perform at that show quite regularly as well. Then Paul Taylor. Mr. Paul Taylor is doing his one-man show regularly. His show is called Hashtag Franglais. And the interesting thing about his show is that it's half in French and half in English because he's bilingual. So he's catering to the bilingual market. And he does his show half in French and half in English. And it's not like half an hour in English and then he switches to French for a half an hour. No, it's like sentence by sentence. Some of the sentences are in English, some of the sentences are in French. Some stories are in English, some stories are in French. And it's fascinating and very, very funny. And at the moment, he's doing that every Friday at 8 p.m. at the So Gymnase Comedy Club. That's at the moment. I think he's going to change venue. And also there will be other dates. I think there are other dates that he's doing. You should check out Paul's website for more information at paultaylorcomedy.com. Also, check out Paul's podcast, which is called Becoming a Comedian. You can also find that on his website, paultaylorcomedy.com. The New York Comedy Night is probably the show that's been going the longest in Paris. That's hosted by Sebastian Marx. It features various comedians from around the world, and that's every Friday at 9:30 at the Saut Gymnase Comedy Club. The Saut Gymnase, that's in a large theatre, this really fantastic-looking building. The theatre, the main theatre is called the Théâtre du Gymnase Mary Bell, I think. Théâtre du Gymnase. And it's in this grand-looking building. And so I imagine when you come to see a show there, you arrive and you go, my God, this is amazing. Look at the size of this theatre. It looks beautiful. And then you realise that the English show is upstairs, in a little room upstairs, not in the main theatre. But it's a cool room. They do cocktails and things in there, and it's nice. It's got a nice lounge vibe. It's really good. Sarah Donnelly, the American Sarah Donnelly, she's been on this podcast before, but not for a while. She is now doing a one-woman show, which is called Help, I Married a Frenchman. And it's all about her life in Paris, including interesting story of how she married her French husband and other things like that. And that's Saturdays at 8 p.m. at the Saut Gymnase Comedy Club. After that, you have the Great British American Comedy Night, which is one of those international comedy shows. I perform there sometimes. Saturdays at 9:30 after Sarah's show at the Saut Gymnase. Sebastian Marx has his one-man show, which has been going for ages, and that's called A New Yorker in Paris, and that's Fridays at 8 p.m. at the Apollo Theatre. I think it's Fridays at 8 p.m. at the Apollo Theatre, but just check the website and you can find out. Also, if you want to try doing stand-up yourself, if you've never done it before or you're just curious about doing it yourself, if you've got some things to say, you think you could be funny, then there is an open mic night in Paris, and it's called the French Fried Comedy Open Mic Night with Vanessa Starr. And that's an open mic. That means that anyone can perform. Just arrive 30 minutes in advance and put your name on the list, and then you can get up and, you know, try and make the audience laugh. That's exciting. That's really fun and exciting. I remember my first open mic nights. They were really good fun because you never know what's going to happen, and you can just, you feel nervous, but you've got some things to say. Sometimes they go brilliantly and everyone laughs. Sometimes they're a total nightmare and you make a complete fool of yourself. It's always, an interesting and weird experience. And the French Fried Open, the French Fried Comedy Open Mic Night is on Wednesdays at 6 p.m. at the Pan Am Art Cafe. All right. Now, let's talk about Brexit and let's talk about football. Brutball or... I don't know, football and X. What am I trying to say? I'm trying to combine Brexit and football. And considering Brexit is already a combination, it's already a, what's the word for that? Portmanteau? I don't know. Anyway, Brexit's already a combination word. Brexit is a funny word, isn't it? Brexit. It sounds like a breakfast cereal. It's like the sort of thing you would eat in the morning. It's like, wake up to Brexit every morning, you know? Brexit, the sunshine breakfast. It sounds like that. Like, oh, nice bowl of Brexit there. Yum, yum, yum. With a bit of credit crunch on top as well. Yum, yum. Brexit with credit crunch. Lovely. With added liquidity. Yeah, that's a little joke there for all the economists listening to this podcast. So Brexit and football. So Paris is full of football fans at the moment because of the Euros. I was out in Pigalle last night because of the comedy show, not the sex shops. No, it was the comedy show. That's why I was there. And I was out there and the place was full of football fans. It was really cool, actually, because there were so many different fans from so many different countries all hanging around. And the atmosphere was actually very good. There was no sense of trouble, no sense of violence or anything. It feels like the violence has stopped. I mean, I haven't been fully keeping up with all of the news, So it might be the case that there have been some problems in some places. But as far as I'm aware, the violence is sort of died down a bit. And generally the mood outside last night was a lot of fun. And there were crowds of supporters. The Welsh fans were on particularly good form. They were all singing and getting drunk and generally being quite merry and of good value. They were making a lot of noise on the metro, which probably pissed off all the locals. But that's not difficult to do. I imagine all the French people are, oh, putain, oh la la. Although, actually, I saw some of the French locals getting into it and smiling and laughing at all the drunken Welsh people and English people and Irish people and German people and Polish people and Ukrainian people who were having fun in the city yesterday. So that was good fun. A few results. Let's go through some Euro 2016 results. So this is, are we in week two now? I think we are. So Slovakia beat Russia. And France beat Albania. It took them enough time, but eventually they got two goals in there. And then yesterday, England versus Wales. There was Switzerland Romania as well. Can't forget that. 1-1 between Switzerland and Romania on Wednesday. England versus Wales was yesterday, and I went down to the local sports bar to watch that. I managed to take some time out and go down and watch that, and so I sat in the bar. And there were various English and Welsh people sitting around the bar watching it too. And, we won. We won 2-1. We beat Wales. I kind of feel a little bit sorry for Wales because they did really well. They scored a goal in the first half. And in fact, it was 1-1 for most of the second half. We scored an equaliser in the sort of the middle of the second half. And it looked like Wales were either going to win or going to hold us to a draw. And there were shots of the Welsh supporters in the audience, all singing and dancing in the audience and getting really emotional, getting carried away with the emotion of the game. And it was just really great. I just felt like the Welsh fans were brilliant. Just the manner that they carried themselves with was really great and just really good spirit. And, you know, they don't normally, let's face it, they don't normally do very well in international football competitions. So it's great to see them competing in the Euros and doing pretty well. But in the end, yeah, we did manage to score two goals against them. It was difficult, but we did it. I mean, England were okay in the second half. I think the main reason for that is that Roy Hodgson brought on a couple of substitutes, which sort of changed our approach, and that was the right thing to do. So we in the first half, Wales scored a goal against us. It was Gareth Bale who exploited a little problem. It was our goalkeeper. Our goalkeeper left a large amount of space open. He kind of positioned himself wrong. He made a mistake, and Gareth Bale spotted it, and he, you know, slotted the ball into the goal, exploiting this mistake that our keeper had made by kind of leaving a large gap on one side. Because the goalkeeper, one of the things the keeper has to do is try and stand in a central position. The keeper should be aware of where he's standing in front of the goal. He should probably stand a little bit forwards in order to, shut down the angles. Because, you know, when you're facing the goal and the goalkeeper is in front of you, if the goalie is close to you, then obviously he's much bigger and the goal is smaller. If the goalkeeper is further away, then he's smaller and the goal is bigger, you see? So it's about shutting down the space. Maybe he could have positioned himself better. So he's probably feeling a bit lucky that we didn't lose that game. So Wales scored in the first half. In the second half, Roy Hodgson brought on a couple of substitutes. So I think that really made a difference. He brought on Vardy. And who was the other guy he brought on? Oh, dear, this is where I'm showing my lack of memory for names. Anyway, it doesn't matter. Anyway, it worked because we got two goals. They were scrappy goals. They weren't that convincing. In fact, I'm still not completely convinced by our attacking abilities. We didn't really get many shots on goal throughout the game. We did dominate. We did, especially in the second half. We dominated. But that's partly because Wales were playing very deep. Okay, now deep. This is one of those words that you hear commentators use in English. To go deep, to play deep. And depth as well. So deep in football just means like when you're far into one of the halves. So let's say if you're playing, you can be deep when you're attacking, and you can be deep when you're defending. All right. So if you're defending and you play deep, it means the whole team is sitting deep inside your own half. So the whole team is like very far back, close to their own goal, occupying the space sort of in, you know, at the end, let's say. That's called playing deep. And it's a defensive strategy because you fill the, you know, your half full of your players, and it's more difficult for the opposing team to get through and get access to the goal. Okay, so that's playing deep. And also to go deep. If you're attacking and you go deep, that's when players manage to move deep inside the opponent's half. Okay, so you hear these expressions, to go deep, to play deep as well. We also have the expression strength in depth. Depth in a football team refers to the skill set that you have within your squad. So if you've got a lot of depth in your squad, it means that you've got lots of good players to choose from. Okay. So a lot of depth. Now, some teams, they don't have much depth because they don't have many really great players to choose from. So there's not much depth. Other teams have got a lot of depth. They've got lots of great players that they can choose from. All right. So you might hear about strength in depth, meaning the strength, the overall strength of the team. And the manager has got a lot of players in his whole squad, not just on the pitch, but sitting on the bench that he can choose from. All right. Wales were playing very deep. They were playing a very defensive strategy after they scored their first goal. I think what they were doing is just trying to defend their lead and defend the 1-1 result as well. And England, you know, most of the game was played in Wales' half, and England were desperately trying to get the ball in the back of the net. But again, we weren't really getting many convincing shots on target. And, you know, at the end of the day in football, it's all about goals, isn't it? You've got to hit the target. So I think we need to step that up. We've got to start finding the target more often, more regularly, if we're going to get any further through this competition. But we're looking okay now. The table is looking pretty good for England. And I guess we're now in top position. I think we are. Germany and Poland, it was a 0-0 draw. So well done to Poland for managing to defend yourselves against Germany. The Germans there being one of the strongest teams in the competition. So I have to say that was probably a very good performance by Poland, being able to sort of lock the match down and prevent Germany from getting any goals there. So good result for Poland, not such a good result for Germany. You know, you would have thought that they would score a goal because they're extremely good side. Even they might not be as good as they were in the last World Cup, but they're still very strong, I think. Northern Ireland beat Ukraine 2-0. That's a great result for Northern Ireland. Absolutely great result. Northern Ireland is a small country, and it's a small team. They are genuine minnows, and they don't really win big games like this. And so that is a fantastic result for Northern Ireland. And I really hope that England, Wales and Northern Ireland all go through somehow. I think that would just be good for me, obviously, because I'm a Brit. So we've got other games going on. At the moment, Italy are playing Sweden right now as I record this, and it's 0-0 at this stage. Later on today, we've got Czech Republic versus Croatia and Spain versus Turkey. So that's like a little bit of a summary of what's going on there. What's been going on? Oh, did I mention? I'm sure I missed something. Iceland and Portugal. That was a good game. It was 1-1. So Iceland played really, really well to managed to hold Portugal to a draw. Portugal are a strong team. Iceland aren't traditionally that strong, but they managed to raise their game against Portugal. They defended very strongly. And Cristiano Ronaldo, the famous Portuguese player, an amazing talent, he complained about the match strategy of Iceland, complaining that Iceland were too conservative. They just defended, and he thought it was unfair that they played boring football or that they were too conservative. So, and also I understand that Cristiano Ronaldo refused to shake the hands of the Icelandic players and things like that. Come on, Cristiano, show a bit more class, would you please? Show some class, mate. I know that you're an outstanding player. No one's doubting it. And I'm talking to you, Cristiano, because obviously you're attending this meeting, because everyone is attending the meeting, of course. Everyone listens to this podcast, don't they? So you're an outstanding talent, Cristiano, but just, is it necessary to complain like that? You're acting like a spoilt child, all right? Just because you didn't win, they defended themselves against you, mate. That's what they were there to do. A 1-1 draw is a good result for them. So, you know, just show some class, would you, mate? I wonder if he is listening to this, actually. I doubt it. I'm sure he's got more important things to do, like complain about Iceland and train for the Euros and spend money and appear in advertising and things like that. But you never know. Maybe someone's like, Cristiano, like texting him. Cristiano, Luke Thompson from Luke's English Podcast is saying stuff about you on his podcast. Stop what you're doing. Stop the rigorous training procedure. Stop the advertising, the extremely well-paid advertising, and listen to his podcast. He's been talking about you. Yeah, okay. So anyway, there's the Euros. I'm just glad to say that the violence seems to have sort of died down. That's good. That's nice, isn't it? Yes, it is. What else? What else is going on? Brexit. Brexit is less than a week away. And I mean, if you're in the UK or if you're following the UK's news, then it's all about Brexit, and it's also about other weird stuff that's going on. But yes, Brexit. No one seems to know what's going to happen. There has been a swing, it seems, towards the Leave side. The polls seem to show that there's a slight swing in their direction. So, I mean, I think the last time I spoke to you, the polls were saying that the Remain side was in the lead, but it seems that it's swung towards the Leave side now. And I wonder how it's going to go over the next 6 days. Is it going to swing back to the Remain side? I don't know, really. I don't know, but there's a lot of commentary about it. And a lot of, you know, differences of opinion. It's still pretty much 50-50 split. One thing is for sure, one thing that both sides can agree on, everyone's an idiot, all right? Everyone's wrong, according to someone. So everyone's disagreeing with each other. You get people writing what appears to be the final word, you know, in an article or a very long Facebook post. People are sort of saying, right, I've had enough of this, and here's the situation. And then they write out a long post, and then you think, that's it, they've answered all the questions. And then you look at the comments, and then someone has posted a very intelligent response that disagrees with it. So the opinions are all over the place. No one seems to be able to agree on even some of the most basic things, like, for example, what the EU actually is and what it's there to do and whether or not it's democratic and who's the good guy and who's the bad guy. It's not really clear. No one even seems to know where the UK is. Like, are we actually in Europe or are we not in Europe? Technically, we are in the EU, of course, but a lot of people think that we're not in Europe, of course, because we're an island and there's just that stretch of water. We're an island, and that is actually one of the arguments for some of the Brexiteers. They cite this as an argument. Like, the UK is an independent nation. We've always been separate from Europe. We are a proud island nation. That's the argument, that they're an island. We're an island. We're an independent island nation, and we always have been. Meanwhile, Ireland are saying, sorry, Britain, that's not an argument. Because we're an island. We're even called Ireland. We're more of an island than you. In a way, we're an island off an island. We're like a double island. And we're called Ireland. And we want to be in the EU. So your whole argument, your whole island argument is invalid, okay? Meanwhile, Northern Ireland are just happy to be in the Euro 16 football championships, aren't they? You know, they're just like, we made it! They're just chuffed to be in the Euros. England, of course, as we know, are in the Euros as well, and you know, that's a work in progress. England, in fact, I don't know if you know about this, but England considered having a referendum on the football. The options were, should we exit the tournament in the first round or lose on penalties to Germany? Yes, a little bit of topical humour there about the football. The England's football referendum, should we exit the tournament in the first round or lose on penalties to Germany? And polls show that it's a 50-50 split. Ha 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 ha. Hilarious comedy here on Luke's English podcast. I personally think that the UK should stay in the EU, and there are lots of reasons for that. My own personal selfish reasons are not just because I believe in the European project, but also I really can't stand doing French paperwork. French paperwork is a nightmare. There's tons of it. There's way too much. It's really complicated. And I know that if we leave the EU, I'm going to get a lot of letters from the government. You know, I'm going to have to deal with all of the legal ramifications of my status in France and all that kind of thing. And it's going to involve a lot of paperwork. Just to give you an idea of how complicated it is, whenever you ask foreign people who are living in France what is annoying about living here, obviously there are many brilliant things. The bread is delicious. Well done, France. Yum, yum, yum. But also plenty of other things. It's a fantastic place. But when you ask people what's annoying, then one of the most common things is that they talk about the admin, the administration, and the paperwork. There's a hell of a lot of paperwork here. I don't know why, but everything's so complicated. I'll give you an example, right? Because I live here and I pay taxes here, I have to have a social security number. And so you have to apply for what's called a carte vitale, like a health insurance card. And it took me 2 years to get my carte vitale. It took me 2 years. And a lot of that is because of the admin, all the paperwork. So first of all, just applying for the thing in the first place was like trying to apply for like some impossible job. It was like the most difficult job application I've ever done. So they required me to give them an updated, recently issued and officially stamped birth certificate from my own country. And it couldn't be like my original birth certificate. It had to be a new one. Like I had to get, you know, the government in the UK to produce a new birth certificate with a date and a dated stamp on it. I don't know why that's necessary. What's wrong with the old one? You know, is there any chance that I've... Why is it necessary? I haven't... You want to check that I haven't, like, been born again since I was originally born? I don't know how that works. So they ask you for that. They ask you for all these different other documents and things like that. And you have to photocopy them and send them off. And so what happened is I got all my stuff together. I've, you know, managed to apply for all these things, got my new birth certificate and everything like that, and sent it off to the office. And I imagine what happened then is that my package arrived at the office and it just went straight onto the bottom of their pile. It's probably some person sitting behind a desk in some big office building, God knows where, in France somewhere, in some bureaucratic office. And there's a big pile of applications and mine just went right on the bottom of the pile. And then after God knows how many weeks of cigarette breaks and coffee breaks and holidays and public holidays and things like that, eventually the person in the office got to my application, and they looked through the application and they noticed that all of my documents were out of date because it had taken them so long to get to it. It's taken me so long to get all the documents together. By the time the person actually comes to process my application, all the documents are out of date. So what do? They send the whole thing back to me and they say, "Your all of your documentation is out of date. Please send us your updated documents in order for us to be able to process your carte vitale." Right, so at that point, I get the letter. I'm like, oh, for God's sake, I have to do this all again. So then I go through the process again, trying to get all of the updated documents again, putting it all together in a package and sending it off to the office. And then it goes to the bottom of the pile. And by the time the person gets to read it, all the documents are out of date again. So they have to send it back to me. And this went on for 2 years. 2 years. Thank God I didn't break my leg or something. Although I did have a temporary solution, which was the European Health Insurance Card, which is a sort of cover. It's a kind of insurance cover, which is one of the benefits of being in the EU, actually, that any member of the EU gets to have this insurance card, and it can pay for some of your medical fees if you get sick or if you get injured in the EU. If the UK leaves the EU, then we won't have that. We might need to negotiate something else, but I wonder if they, you know, we'd be able to negotiate something as good as that. But so any British people, if we leave, any British people who go skiing in the Alps, in the French Alps or something, in the winter, if anyone, any of them have an injury, then that's going to be very expensive, isn't it? It's going to be very costly. It's going to be very difficult to get healthcare and emergency healthcare and stuff like that. So anyway, 2 years of me having to send my application in and them sending it back to me because the documents were out of date. And then I did it super fast, got all the documents together really quickly. And I, instead of posting it, I actually went down to the office and handed it to a person. I had to actually look someone in the eyes and actually hand it to them and say, look, I am a human being. I exist. Look, I'm looking at you in the eye. I think the thing is, right, that here you have to say bonjour before you achieve anything in France. That's just a general rule. If you're coming to France and you want to achieve something, even like buying some bread in the supermarket, you have to say bonjour first. Bonjour or bonsoir. That has to be the first thing you do. If you don't say that, then, you know, then just, it's going to be more difficult. You have to say bonjour. It's like the magic word. And when you say that, the ice melts and suddenly then you can have a relationship. If you don't say bonjour, then you might be in trouble. Like, for example, you might go to a shop and say, une baguette, s'il vous plaît. And the woman might go, bonjour. Ah, bonjour, une baguette, s'il vous plaît. Une baguette? Yeah, it is, isn't it? So anyway, maybe that's what I had to do. I actually had to go to the office. Bonjour, here's my application. Look me in the eyes. There you are. There's the application. I did that. Guess what? A month later, carte vitale. Yes, get in. So I actually have got my carte vitale now. Yes, Jurassic Park. All right. So what was I talking about? French admin. So if the UK leaves the EU, I'm going to have to do a lot of more admin. So please, any British people, please don't vote to leave. That's a stupid idea. Also, if we do leave, if the UK does leave the EU, then I hope the Brexiteers realise that there will be consequences if we go. There will be negotiations. The UK and Europe will have to negotiate lots of things. There's going to have to be a lot of complicated agreements. For example, Europe might ask for all of its stuff back. You know, it might be like a breakup, you know, like a breakup between a boyfriend and girlfriend where they have to separate all the stuff. And she's like, yeah, those are mine, that's mine, those records are mine. And so Europe might ask for all of its stuff back. You know, France might say to Britain, okay, Britain, so you've left the EU, fine. That's fine. If that's what you want to do, fine. But I think you've got some of our stuff and we'd like you to return it, please. For example, cheese. We'll have all of our cheese back, thank you. And England say, okay, that's fine. You can have your cheese, France. It's okay. We've got our own cheese. We've got British cheese. France goes, okay, good luck with that. Yes, Britain, we'll have all of our wine back as well, please, Britain, all of the wine. And Britain goes, okay, all right, that's fine. There you go, France, you can have all your wine back, and Italy and Spain and all the other wine-producing areas. Yes, okay, you can have all your wine back, that's fine. That's okay, because we can buy all our wine from our friends in Australia. Meanwhile, in Australia, they're going, raise the price on the wine. What? And raise the price and the quality? No, just the price. So that's Australia. They might be asking for their wine back. Who else? France. There's still plenty of things that France could take back. France at this point step in and they say, oh yes, England, Britain, whatever you're called, whoever you are. The UK. Romance. We'll have all of our romance, please. Because I think you'll find that romance is a French concept. So we'll have the romance back. And England or Britain or the UK or whatever they're called, England says, that's fine. You can have the romance. That's fine. We don't really understand it anyway. We weren't using it. You can have it. We'll just go straight back to having functional sex. That's fine. France go, well, there's still some other things that we need back. Table. We'll have table. We'll have all your tables. Table is a French word. Table's a French word. So we'll have all your tables. And Britain are like, well, that's going to make life complicated, isn't it? It's going to be inconvenient. Where are we going to put all of our drinks? Where are we going to put our cups of tea and our pints of beer? And at this point, Germany, Belgium and the Netherlands all arrive and they say, talking of beer, Britain, we'll have all of the lager, please. We'll have all of our lager back. That's it. Give us the lager. At this point, Britain realises what's happening. The reality sets in and they're like, oh, God, no, not the lager. Oh, dear. And then Ireland arrive. Ireland step in and say, and we'll have all of the Guinness back as well. Basically, Europe is going to keep asking all of its stuff back until basically Britain is just standing there. The only thing they've got left is just one potato. That's all they have left. And even then, you know, and Scotland as well. Let's not forget about Scotland. Scotland are going to say, oh, and we'll have all of our whiskey, please, and James Bond. And England says, what the hell are you talking about? You're not in Europe, Scotland. You're in the UK. And Scotland says, oh, yes, we left when you weren't looking. Yeah, we had to go back to... we left our jacket in Europe. We had to go back. So England are then left on their own with Wales and Northern Ireland. And, we just left there with just a potato. And then Ireland say to England, well, yeah, now you know how we feel, you stupid bastards. So that's obviously what's going to happen. So I hope that we stay in the EU to avoid all of these complications, I think. But, you know, the Brexiteers are still going on about their usual arguments, like the threat of immigration, although it's not really been proven that, I don't know if you saw what happened with Nigel Farage. Did you see this on the news? Nigel Farage, he's the leader of UKIP. He's one of the most outspoken proponents of the Leave campaign. I can't stand him. I'll be honest, I can't stand him anymore. I can't stand his grinning face. His grinning face with his beer breath and his cigarette coat, his nicotine-stained teeth and that big grinning face of his. His big, sweaty, shiny, grinning face for too much beer and cigarettes. I imagine that if I was an English footballer, right, if I was a professional English footballer playing in the Euros, trying to score a goal, I think that would be a distracting image. Because you know those moments when, you know, those moments of pressure, those moments of glory. Let's say you've got the ball and you're about to try and score a goal against Germany, or it's a penalty situation against Germany. The pressure's on. You know, you see your life flashing before your eyes. You step up to take the penalty. And at the very last moment, you think of your country, you think of England. And these images of England come flashing through your mind. And the one that sticks there is the image of the grinning Nigel Farage. And you'd miss, wouldn't you? You'd miss. It would be distracting. You'd miss the goal. What happened with Nigel Farage? There was this thing where, in order to protest against the European Union, just a few days ago, Nigel Farage gathered together a bunch of fishermen, and he said to them, "Okay, lads, stop your fishing for the day. I know that you're going to lose a lot of money doing this, but it'll be worth it." All the fishermen are like, really? And Nigel Farage goes, yeah, because of bent bananas and immigrants. It'll be worth it. And all the fishermen go, yeah, okay. So he got all the fishermen together and a bunch of fishing boats, and they went up the River Thames, and they were flying flags and generally sort of trying to campaign for the UK to leave. This big flotilla of boats. A flotilla is like a big collection of boats that all travel together in one unit. So this big flotilla with Nigel Farage there in his pinstripe suit with his brass buttons, his grinning face. And it was hilarious because suddenly on another boat, there was a bunch of Remain protesters protesting against the flotilla, and one of the people on the boat was Bob Geldof. Bob Geldof was a campaigner for human rights, and he's a charity worker, and he used to be a rock star. He was in a band called the Boomtown Rats, and he's the guy who organized the Live Aid concert and the Band Aid concert and also Live 8, those huge rock concerts for charity to try to alleviate the famine that was happening in Sudan and Ethiopia in Africa during the 1980s. You must have seen footage of Live Aid. Some of the most famous footage is of Queen, Freddie Mercury and Queen. Freddie Mercury and Queen performed at Live Aid, famously in the 1980s, and it was amazing. And they did they raised loads of money for charity. And Bob Geldof is generally, he's a bit crazy. He's a bit of an eccentric. He's actually Irish originally, but he lives in the UK. He's a bit of an eccentric and so on. But he's great, I think. And he arrived on another boat and with a few other people for the Remain campaign. And he had a big loudspeaker and he was shouting at Nigel Farage through the loudspeaker. It was hilarious. I think I can play some of it to you. Okay, what I'm going to play to you here is just some of the coverage from a YouTube sort of news channel called the Lip TV. And I guess I'll leave the link for this video on the page, but I'm just going to play some of it to you. You can hear some details of the story, and also you'll hear Bob Geldof saying comments to Nigel Farage through the loudspeaker. Here it is.
As they were going down, as they were approaching Westminster, they were approached by another boat, a pleasure cruiser, and on board that pleasure cruiser was none other than Bob Geldof. Bob Geldof started blasting loud music. Nigel Farage was somewhat awkwardly in the middle of a TV interview. He had to curtail the TV interview because he was being drowned out by the music coming from Bob's boat. And then Bob started haranguing Farage and calling him all sorts of different names and calling him out as a fraud and no friend of the fishermen. Let's take a look.
You are no fisherman's friend. You were on the European Parliament Fishing Committee and you attended one out of 43 meetings. You're a fraud, Nigel. Go back down the river because you're up one without a canoe.
So there was any number of instances. The police were then called. There was a helicopter flying overhead. The Leave campaigners were started squirting with a hose from one of the boats, was squirting the pleasure cruiser. Certain people boarded Bob Geldof's boat, and there was an altercation there. It's curiously and somewhat quintessentially British. It is, by all accounts, from a lot of the journalists who've covered any number of these campaigns, one of the weirdest days in British politics.
So one of the weirdest days in British politics. What a weird moment, this kind of confrontation on with Bob Geldof, the rock star, and Nigel Farage, the Eurosceptic, on boats. One boat shouting loud comments at the other one squirting water through a hose. Weird moments, weird times in British politics. And Bob Geldof there arguing that Nigel Farage was a fraud, because Nigel's point is that he's protecting the fishermen, that he thinks that if the UK is in the European Union, it's bad for British fishermen because of the laws that come from the EU regarding, you know, how much fish can be caught and, you know, which waters are accessible by which fishermen. And he thinks that it's bad for British fishermen. Really, the European Union is there to try to protect the reserves of fish, because if you fish too much, then there won't be any fish left, because we're dealing with environmental issues and things like that. But no, Nigel, that's not good enough for Nigel Farage. He basically, all he can see is that he doesn't see that picture. He doesn't see that it's necessary to regulate the fishing in order to actually protect the fish for the future. Instead, Farage professes to be the friend of the fishermen. But what Geldof was saying is that Nigel Farage was a fraud, which is quite a strong accusation, because Farage didn't take part in votes on fishing laws in the European Parliament. He wasn't actually there to defend the rights of the fishermen at the time. So why then is he now talking about it so loudly, when at the time the law was passed, he didn't seem to care or want to do anything about it? Anyway, it's just an example of some of the weird, crazy stuff that's going on at the moment as we get closer to this referendum. I'm sure that tension is going to get higher and higher as we move forwards. Anyway, that's kind of fun and lighthearted stuff. But actually, there has been some really serious news, just in the last 24 hours. And this is the moment where the podcast gets a bit more serious, all right? Because, let's see, yesterday, I remember I got a notification on my phone And the notification basically said that a British MP called Joe Cox had been shot. And I thought, oh my God, what now? Now what? I mean, this is only just a week or two after this horrific shooting, which happened in Orlando, another mass shooting in the United States. And you know, you must have read about that. It's the biggest mass shooting that has ever occurred in the USA. A man went into a gay club in Orlando, armed with a pistol and an assault rifle, and he started shooting people. I understand that he was associated with ISIS or associated with Daesh, the Islamic State or whatever we're supposed to call them. I understood that I don't know if he was associated with them, but it seems that Daesh claimed responsibility for him. They're like, yeah, he's one of ours. Yeah, we'll take that one. And then it arose that I read reports of this, all right, that the guy who actually committed the shooting, this is the Orlando shooting, not the Joe Cox incident. I'm going to come to that. The guy who actually did the shooting, it turns out, was a regular client at the club. And he was, I think he was a gay man himself who would go there to pick up other guys. This is what I read in the newspapers. And so as soon as this news came out, I think that Daesh then were like, no, he's nothing to do with us. No, we've got nothing to do with him. Anyway, horrific, absolutely horrific. And of course, now this is bringing the gun control subject straight back into the public discussion. And Donald Trump has said things about it, and Trump has been typically insensitive about this, and he's not really he's not speaking out against weapons. He still defends the right to bear arms, and it's just really, really complex and weird. But coming back to the UK then, so I got this notification on my phone yesterday that said that a British MP had been shot in England. And I thought, what on earth is this? So let's have a look at the details of the story. This is quite traumatic, especially when you think of the UK. Obviously, it's one person compared to the 50 people in the USA. But I mean, just personally for me, it's closer to home. And also, it comes at a time in which there's a lot of conversation about immigration and about politics and certain subjects. And so it seems to be quite sickening. So I'm going to find out some details of the story so I can let you know. Okay, so I'm reading from the BBC's website here, and it says this is a story from yesterday. It's probably been updated since then, and it says Joe Cox, MP, dead after shooting attack. And there's a picture of her there, and it says an MP has died after she was shot and stabbed in a horrific assault in her constituency, police have said. The story is quite graphic. It's a person's been killed. Joe Cox, Labour MP for Batley and Spen, was left bleeding on the ground after the attack in Birstall, West Yorkshire. A man was arrested nearby. One eyewitness told the BBC that they heard her attacker shout, "Put Britain first," at least twice beforehand. Tributes have flooded in from politicians, including David Cameron, Jeremy Corbyn, and also the American Secretary of State, John Kerry. Mrs. Cox's husband, Brendan, said she would want people to unite to fight against the hatred that killed her. Vote Leave and Vote Remain have both suspended campaigning in the EU referendum in the light of the attack. So the campaigning has stopped. Since this happened, Mrs. Cox, who was 41, is the first sitting Member of Parliament to be killed since 1990, when Ian Gow was the last in a string of politicians to die at the hands of Northern Irish terror groups. The man, so who did this? Who killed her. The man taken into custody was arrested in Market Street, not far from Birstall Library, where Mrs. Cox was holding a constituency surgery. So she was having a meeting with members of her constituency. He's been named locally as Tommy Mayer. Hundreds of Mrs. Cox's friends and colleagues gathered together for a vigil at St. Peter's Church in Birstall earlier. We don't really know the details. We don't really know why it's happened, but it seems at this stage that it's a politically motivated killing. And the man who did it, it seems, was a sort of neo-fascist English guy who, I guess, did it as a way of taking revenge, or as a way of striking out against the things that she believed in, because Jo Cox was all about multiculturalism, and she did a lot of work to defend the rights of immigrants, and she spoke up for the victims of the war in Syria, and she made lots of very vocal statements in favour of a sympathetic approach to the individuals who have suffered because of the conflict in Syria. And she has a progressive attitude. She had a progressive attitude towards dealing with immigrants in the country. And she had an inclusive point of view regarding religious faith, and she believed in tolerance of people's religious faiths and things like that. And she was very vocal about these things, and she was doing a lot of work on those things in her constituency. And apparently, I don't really know, but this is what seems to be the case, that the guy who killed her was motivated by his disagreement with the things she was doing, and he shot her as a protest against her position, which is obviously sickening. And it's ironic as well. It's very ironic. And Britain First, which is a Facebook group first and foremost, Britain First, they are a far right group who say that they stand up for British values. Essentially, they are sort of anti-immigration, anti-Islam group, and they do a lot of work on Facebook. They've managed to gain a lot of supporters on Facebook. Britain First have put out a statement saying that they disagree with the idea that this guy represents the far right or neo-fascist movement in the UK. And they said, don't let the actions of this individual sort of colour your viewpoint of our movement, which is very ironic, isn't it? Because that's exactly what they do to Islam, that they take the actions of a tiny minority of extremist idiots, these violent extremists. They look at the actions of those people, and then they use it to form opinions about the whole of Islam in general, which is ironic, because that's exactly what they're complaining about. That when people say that this guy somehow is representative of the neo-fascist movement in the UK, that that's somehow unfair. The whole thing is just ridiculous, I mean, this is no way to express your views. I mean, I would say this about any kind of attack like this, that this is the worst kind of inarticulacy. And it's just sickening, and it makes me very angry that someone thinks that this is the way to get your point across. It's just absolutely infuriating. Yeah, it makes me emotional. She seemed to be a lovely person. I didn't know her, and I, to be fair, to be perfectly honest, I didn't know about her existence before this happened. But the things I've seen about her, she seemed to be a genuinely lovely person. This is just a tragedy. I saw a video on Facebook, which was like a little sort of report, I think, by The Guardian or the BBC about her. Let me see if I can find it. I don't know if I'll be able to find it. But this is it. I don't know if there's audio for this. Let's see.
Right now.
I'm elated.
Okay, so this is like a video produced by Channel 4 News, which sort of sums up who she was. It's on Facebook. I don't think I can embed this on the page for the episode. And also, I don't know if you're going to be able to understand everything, but I'll play it to you anyway. You're going to hear little clips of her speaking and some other things.
How do you feel right now?
I'm elated, but I'm humbled that the people of Batley and Spen have put their trust in me to be your next Member of Parliament. But I'm very excited. And my husband and I have been up all night, along with many of our friends, and we're just coming now to say thank you to people of Batley for voting.
That's her saying thank you when she was voted in as the MP for her constituency. And it says, Jo Cox MP was a vocal anti-racism and pro-immigration campaigner.
And Lion Confectionery.
She used her maiden speech, her first speech in Parliament, to praise immigration in her area.
So I'm sure our communities have been deeply enhanced by immigration, be it Irish Catholics across the constituency or Muslims from Indian Gujarat or Pakistan, principally from Kashmir. And whilst we celebrate our diversity, the thing that surprises me time and time again as I travel around the constituency is that we are far more united and have far more in common than that which divides us.
She was staunchly pro-Remain. Her family took part in the referendum flotilla. I think that's the one I was talking about. Cox was 41 years old. She was married with two young children. Elected to Parliament in 2015, Cox and her family lived on a boat on the River Thames. Following her death, her husband tweeted this picture of his wife, and there's a picture of her standing by their boat.
I'm hoping I'll be zipping down to the House of Commons, which is about half an hour away from where I live on the boat, by a little rib, a speedboat. Now, this is the way to start the day, isn't it? In Syria continue.
Cox was a vocal advocate for the victims of the Syrian war.
To starvation tactics, besiegement, and attacks with impunity.
She was chairwoman of the All-Party Parliamentary Friends of Syria group.
Isn't it time for a rethink in the UK strategy to focus much more? If we only focus on airstrikes against ISIS, we will.
She abstained from voting on airstrikes in Syria, calling for a more ethical solution.
Fail to understand this conflict. President Assad agrees that we urgently now need a mechanism with clear consequences to deter further barbaric attacks on civilians. I have raised repeatedly in this place the need for a no-bombing zone.
Since her shooting, MPs have sent well wishes to one of the kindest people. Cox described herself as a proud Yorkshire woman.
I'm Batley and Spen, born and bred, and I could not be prouder of that. I'm proud that I was made in Yorkshire, and I'm proud of the things that we make in Yorkshire, and Britain should be proud of that too. I look forward to representing the great people of Batley and Spen here over the next 5 years. Yeah. Thank you.
So, this is a bloody tragedy, and now, you know, it's such a complicated thing, but I don't know. I'm going to stop talking about this because it's such a big subject, and I'm not necessarily the guy with all the answers. You know, I'm just an English teacher after all. But I was asked to talk about this by some of my listeners on the website, and I just hope that this is not just something that's going to continue. I think this is just a symptom of the craziness of the times. I'll let you leave your thoughts and stuff on the website. So it's over to you, okay? But let's not get into big arguments and things. Let's just, you know, keep it cool, calm and collected. Let's not get any more emotional and argumentative than is necessary, okay? Let's just keep it cool. But I look forward to reading your comments. By the way, there will be some new episodes of the podcast coming up soon. I've got episodes ready to be published. There will be an episode featuring Ollie Richards. the English polyglot, who always has interesting things to say about language learning. And also, I've prepared an episode about Ali, Muhammad Ali. There's an episode about him coming up, all about boxing, Muhammad Ali's life. And I was particularly keen in that episode to talk about the story of the Rumble in the Jungle, which was this incredible boxing match that he had with George Foreman. It's an amazing story, and you can look forward to listening to that on the podcast soon. Okay, but that's it for this episode, which became serious at the end. Thanks for listening, and have a nice weekend. I'll speak to you on the podcast again soon. Okay, goodbye.
Bye.
Thanks again for listening to Luke's English Podcast. For more information, visit teacherluke.co.uk.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
If you enjoyed this episode of Luke's English Podcast, consider signing up for Luke's English Podcast Premium. You'll get regular premium episodes with stories, vocabulary, grammar, and pronunciation teaching from me, and the usual moments of humour and fun. Plus, with your subscription, you will be directly supporting my work and making this whole podcast project possible. For more information about Luke's English Podcast Premium, go to teacherluke.co.uk/premium info.